Hopefully everybody's ready. So firstly, thank you very much everybody for your time to come here and join myself, Miles Roberts, and Adrian Marsh, our Finance Director, just to present the results for the 6 months to the end of October, our first half of our current financial year. So firstly, we're pleased with the performance. We've seen record profitability and a record margin for the group. If we split that down, we've seen that Europe has grown very nicely organically. Good margin progression. And EuroPac has been excellent. We're very pleased with the first contribution from the EuroPac business in the integration, etc. And we'll talk more about that. In the US, the domestic market has remained very good for us. We've run out of a bit of capacity there, but we're solving that with our new plant, which is now fully operational. Come on in the first, beginning of November, and that gives us a 30% capacity improvement. The export market of paper in the US was poor, as we expected, about to China and US. Hopefully this new plant will be absorbing that back into the domestic market. The cash flow is good. Pleased with that. The plastics disposal is all on track to complete around the end of this fiscal year. Currently very busy. We've seen November being very positive, particularly on as we run up to Christmas. Just in the UK, we've actually seen a 40% improvement in e-commerce business just in the UK alone in the last couple of months. Everybody's shopping online and depending on us to get their Christmas presents delivered. And we're looking forward to the second half. The second half of the year, we're going to see an increase in our activity. We've got a positive outlook for our profitability and the end results.
Thank you, Miles, and good morning, everyone. Just before, Karen, just to clarify, and I wouldn't ordinarily do this, Miles said plastics will be closing at the end of the fiscal year. He didn't, you meant the calendar year. So sorry for the slight correction. I'm going to talk you through our results for the half year. As usual, unless otherwise explained, changes referred to are on a constant currency basis. I'll also be talking about the group on a continuing operations basis, so that's excluding plastics, which is treated as discontinued. Clicker trained, it must be this one. So here are our financial highlights. Revenues up 3% and operating profit up 14%. I'll take you through the bridges for these key line items in a moment. As you can see, we've achieved a record margin in the middle of our target range that we upgraded when I last presented. The growth has flowed through to earnings per share, up 3% on constant currency basis. Dividend per share is up 4%, broadly in line with EPS growth, reflecting our continued confidence in the business and our commitment to shareholder returns. Our return on capital performance has reduced to 11.8%. This is below our target range, reflecting in particular the inclusion of EuroPac since its acquisition in January this year. As guided, this acquisition is dilutive at the outset to our group target, and we remain confident that it will move into our target range as synergies are progressively delivered. Walking through our revenue, I've stood out the impact of EuroPac for comparison purposes. I've also noted the North American division separately because, as you'll see, the drivers for us in that market have been different this period. The main component of revenue growth in the period is obviously the inclusion of EuroPac, and we're very pleased with how that business has been integrated and the results that it has delivered. Volume growth from corrugated boxes contributed £12 million, reflecting the modest growth we've seen in the period. While lower than our usual average growth, this result is delivered in the context of an overall corrugated market in Europe that was flat and relatively stable box prices. The other volume is predominantly from paper and recycling. The decrease from sales price and mix is split around about 80% due to reductions in the selling price of paper and recyclate, with the balance due to reduced box prices. As you know, our revenue is made up of corrugated box sales, other packaging, paper and recyclate. corrugated box, excluding North America and Europac, makes up around about £1.7 billion of the total, with another £500 million from other packaging, such as corrugated sheets, packaging services and packaging solutions. External sales of paper and recyclate, paper for recycling, was around £400 million, which mathematically will cause a reduction in revenue given the fall in paper prices. North America is long paper, so has a different dynamic to our core European business, which is short paper. Here we've seen a fall in revenue of some £39 million, largely due to the sharp fall in the selling price of exported paper. Out of our around 600,000 tonnes of paper we produce in North America, we utilise around 400,000 tonnes in our domestic US packaging business. The balance, obviously some 200,000 tonnes, is exported and sold either to our own European operations or other third parties. And in common with other US businesses, whilst we've seen domestic paper and packaging profitability hold up well with relatively small reductions in domestic pricing, there's been a significant, and it's around £250 a tonne, reduction in the price of exported paper. As we made clear when we acquired Interstate, it was fully our intention to reduce this long paper exposure by both organic growth in existing facilities, the addition of greenfield plants, and or acquiring converting facilities. As you'll have seen in the reception, and Miles has just said, we now have our greenfield operation in Lebanon, Indiana, up and running, which does go a long way to resolve this. Turning to EBITDA, there's a contribution from the Europac acquisition, including the synergies coming through at a good pace, fully on target for our €70 million by 2022. The volume contribution sets out the positive from packaging, which had a similar drop through to previous periods, and the decrease in other volumes, principally reflecting greater paper integration, i.e. less external sales of paper and greater internal consumption within our packaging business. In Europe, we've delivered good price retention in packaging, as demonstrated by the net £29 million benefit between pricing and input cost falls, which I'll describe in more detail on the next slide. The £130 million is substantially all paper and recyclate price reductions, which demonstrates we've again broadly absorbed all other inflationary cost pressures within the business. To sum up what these bridges show, Europe has seen modest corrugated box volume growth at the same time as achieving very good price retention in the face of falling paper prices of around 20%. The paper price fall is reflected both in the tailwind to input costs and also a fall in revenue and profitability for our external paper sales. However, as we're net short of paper in Europe, the overall impact is still positive. The reduction in packaging prices is in the order of 1 to 2%, which is a testament to the quality of our service and the value we add to our customers across Europe. Europac continues to deliver well, and we're fully on track for the synergies targeted. I'm particularly pleased to report that their packaging operations, which were loss-making at the time we bought it, are now profitable, as we've integrated our pricing processes and customer management with their operations. Whilst this ways of working integration was volume negative but profit enhancing in the first quarter, it is now both volume positive and profit enhancing in the second quarter. The US business has performed exceptionally well since acquisition as a result of stronger than expected volume growth last year and a very stable paper price environment in 2018-19. The first half of this year has seen volume growth reduced as we've become capacity constrained in packaging, as we fully utilise the existing plants. And also, as I've mentioned, there was a significant reduction in the export price of paper, which impacted us through our long paper position. Repeat myself, the commissioning of our new greenfield site in Lebanon does start to solve these issues, particularly our need for capacity to support further growth and by reducing our long paper position. I mean, the one slight upside in the low export price of paper in North America is the benefit that that's had in our European paper sourcing operation, which supplies our European packaging business. The amount of the startup costs in the first half for Lebanon is relatively small, with most of the £15 million we guided falling into the second half. Our overall margin performance is definitely a highlight for me in the period. Margins for the group as a whole have improved 110 basis points to the midpoint of our upgraded 10 to 12% range, which we raised last June. However, there are clearly some variations within that. The driver behind those segments that have improved versus those that have declined principally comes down to the amount of paper versus packaging produced in the region. The regions where we have most of our paper capacity, that is North America and North Europe, are noted to be down compared to our paper short regions of South and East Europe. Clearly, our overall group margin reflects our net short paper strategy and the strength of our predominantly FMCG packaging business, which has demonstrated the strength and resilience of our business model. Cash flows continue to be good. EBITDA increased, mainly reflecting the inclusion of Europac. As expected, there's been an increase in CapEx with the inclusion of Europac and the additional expenditure in North America on the Indiana greenfield. As I described, at the full year, our intention is to hold factoring balances at or under £500 million, and whilst we didn't achieve that at the full year because of the inclusion of Europac factoring, the balance at the half year is now £475 million. The working capital outflow is largely driven by a reduction in creditors due to lower paper prices, which would have been partially offset by a similar but smaller reduction in the value of paper inventories. However, inventories are being held at levels higher than we'd normally have to accommodate any Brexit disruption. And once that's settled, we'd expect them to return to normalised levels. The reduction in sold receivables has been largely offset through changes to commercial arrangements with our customers. Moving to net debt, we've remained broadly unchanged from the year end, with free cash flow and the proceeds of the remedy disposals covering dividends and exceptionals. Given the currency matching of our debt to cash flow, we've also seen a negative impact on debt coming from FX, although this is offset in free cash flow. Please note that the net debt as reported now includes an element for lease obligations under IFRS 16 of £242 million, in line with the guidance we gave at the full year in June. This increased doesn't impact our financing gearing ratio, which is reported on the basis of our banking covenant calculations, which are on a frozen GAAP basis. That said, the ratio wouldn't have materially changed due to a similar increase in EBITDA driven by IFRS 16. In the second half of the year, we expect the proceeds of the disposal of plastics of around £400 million net of costs. There'll also be the settlement of the exercise of half of the put option of the 20% stake in Interstate Resources retained by the original seller for about £90 million. Taking both into account at the year end, we expect our reported gearing to be around 2x. We expect the group to continue de-gearing through ongoing cash flow. And during this half, we also further extended the liquidity profile or duration of our debt by issuing a 7-year euro bond at a fixed interest rate of 87.5 basis points. Overall, we've made progress in relation to our medium-term targets. Volume was below our GDP plus one target, but nonetheless represents a further gain in market share. And Miles will talk more about the drivers for our volume growth and our expectation for the second half later in his presentation. As I already mentioned, our return on sales achieved a record margin in the period and goes to describe how the business is managed and the benefit of our international footprint. As discussed earlier, ROACE was impacted by the initial dilutive impact of our recent acquisitions and by 20 basis points due to IFRS 16. So on a pre-IFRS 16 basis, it would have been 12% at the bottom end of our target range. Net debt, as discussed earlier, and cash flow still remains strong. Technical guidance, I think, is pretty much unchanged, although the sharper eyes will spot there's a slight increase in interest to £88 million. That just reflects, you know, where we are now with fixed interest rates and uncertainty of what the charge will be for the year. Otherwise, I'm pretty sure everything is as you last saw it. And clearly, just draw your attention as sterling is strengthening and who knows what will happen post-elections. There is an FX headwind to us as sterling strengthens, given the large amount of our business that's outside of the UK. And finally, we continue to be very proud of our track record, and the progress in this year continues to add to the upward trajectory, both in EPS and dividends per share. I'd now like to hand back to Miles, who talked more about the drivers behind our resilient and growing business.
Great. Well, thank you very much, Adrian. Adrian for that and taking us through the financials for the half year. But what's really been happening in that half year? What is the background to the market? I think we've all seen, I've put a few highlights here about starting with some of that political uncertainty. And sitting where we are today, we don't expect that political uncertainty to subside, certainly during the second half. We'll wait to see what happens in the UK. We'll wait to see what happens between China and in the US, but it's not likely to be solved in the near future. But you've all seen the economies, the general economy has have weakened, but they do appear to be stable at this slightly lower level. We've seen probably about 0.5% come off GDP. Raw material costs have been volatile. It's partly driven by FX. We've seen sterling being quite volatile. We've seen between the euro and the dollar as well. There's been some volatility there. But also seen energy costs come down a bit. We've seen fibre costs, the OCC cost, that's been quite volatile underneath the market, and equally some of the chemicals. But all of that's been dealt with our hedging strategies, etc., and our very well developed procurement function. So broadly, wait to see what happens on the economic side. The economy's weak and stable. Some volatility in pricing, but we can deal with all of that. And of course, what we've all seen is the way our customers and our final consumers are really changing. Look at the amount of publicity that's currently being given to the whole environmental debate. You know about the current COP25 and all the leaders going there. Just the publicity of some of the world leaders who won't be there. This is really changing. Changing how we're shopping, how we feel about the environment, about the role of packaging in that, and we have to solve that. It's no longer good enough just to say we make a recycled product. We have to show as a company how we are actually recycling them. Our customers are expecting us to show that, and as a net recycler, that means we pick up and we recycle more than we produce. This is something that's becoming more important to our customers and the final consumer. We're seeing the sophistication of packaging solutions growing. I'll talk more about that in the later slide, but this is where we thrive. This is where we really start to give more differentiation to our product and our customers. And as I say, with that whole environment, we're pleased with the first half results. So how's it being delivered? Sustainable value-added solutions. We've continued to gain market share in a flat market. I'll talk more about our boxer price discipline. But if you look at what we're trying to do in that differentiation, why have we been able to drive pricing in packaging? We've always said we're a packaging-led business. We have a short paper position. We've shown when raw material costs have been increasing, how we've been able to recover that. Now showing how we're able to hold on to our pricing with the solutions that we've developed. Is that market changing in the degree of importance of our packaging to our customers? The Europack integration, as you know, this is a key feature of DS Smith, how we integrate. I'll be talking more about that integration. But one which we're very pleased with, and you can see that in the financial results produced in the first half. And obviously about North America, we'll talk more about that later, just on that Indiana site and what's really happening in that US, in that very exciting US market. So firstly, about our sustainable packaging solutions. Let's just look at that environment. We have seen a whole range of the way our customers are talking to us. It's no longer, can I put a label on the product that says this is recyclable? They're saying to us, well, where does that fibre come from? What is your supply chain? This is where the differentiation is coming from our customers, why they're focusing on fewer suppliers, a smaller group of suppliers. They can really understand, where are you getting your product from? If we talk about fibre origins, the pulp you can use. Where does that pulp come from? What is the policy of growing trees, replanting trees? What is your policy on soil quality and maintaining the quality of soil? Are we cutting down the northern forests, or actually are we restocking the supply of wood in the markets in which we're taking the fibre? What are the sorts of trees that you are planting? Are they indigenous? How does that affect the local community? All of these things about driving into not the efficiency but the effectiveness, the sustainability of your supply chain. We put down Nestlé here. We've done an enormous amount of work with them, with Greenpeace, with the communities in which we are harvesting, just to show about the strength of the business model, and about recyclability. It's an easy word, but it's no longer can the product be recycled. You have to demonstrate to us that particular box can be recycled easily. Can it be recycled in country, so you don't have to send it overseas? How easy is it to break down that product such that it can be transported to be recycled easily to avoid the carbon footprint of the transportation? All of these things come into what our customers are asking us to do. If you look at the hard to recycle, again, you said this product can be recycled, but how has it become contaminated in its use? We talk about pizza boxes, or pizza boxes with grease we can deal with. Pizza boxes that still have half an uneaten pizza in there, that's more difficult. So how do we work that customer to communicate with the consumer, take out the uneaten pizza? With coffee cups, how we've been able to work in what is a very difficult product to recycle to the position we are in today, where we can recycle all of the UK's 2.5 billion coffee cups that are used per annum. Enough to go around the world a number of times. That's just coffee cups that people are buying. Previously, all of it went to landfill. So working with customers like Costa Coffee as to how we can generate a different product, but then recycle it as well. And, of course, about plastic replacement. The topic of the day is going to be the topic of the future. And this is what we've been doing in one area. If we look at plastic replacement, as you know, we published a report last year, a report that we produced with an independent consultancy. Their copies are available here, but I know we've distributed it widely. This is just looking at a simple thing about supermarket aisles, and this is what consumers see. It's highly visible. So the retailers and our customers want to show to the consumer the improvements that are being made, and we've identified there is an immediate opportunity to take out 70 billion units of plastic that are currently used in Europe's retail aisles. How we can replace that today with corrugated solutions. And we've developed those solutions. If we look at fresh produce for punnets, currently there are 27 billion plastic units that are used on retailers' shelves. They can be replaced by corrugated. If we look at the packaging of fish and cheese, 44 billion units per annum in Europe. Less than 7% of those are recycled. So every year of that 70 billion, 63 billion typically end up going to landfill. And we're showing how we can replace, and we've developed over 650 designs for this, 400 into retail, 100 into e-commerce, and 150 into B2B. And here are some of them. These are being used now. There's a shot there on the top left about things like the plant pots. You know, in the UK, 450 million plastic plant pots are sent to landfill per annum. That's just the UK, which is about 15% of the European operation. So if you scale that up and you see the billions of units that are going there, we've developed a solution that can replace that with a fibre-based solution. It's currently being sold now. It's out there, and we aim to replace a substantial part, certainly starting in the UK. If you look up in the top right, you've got our solution to the packaging of meat, fish and cheese. That's now available today and is now being rolled out, and that takes out about 90% of the packaging of the plastic packaging that's previously been used. That's 44 billion units of plastic currently going to landfill, and we can replace that. If you go into Waitrose, you'll see that those plastic punnets that are used for grapes, well, they're no longer plastic punnets. They're now a DF Smith solution. That's on sale now. I'm a retailer that's very keen to show how they're improving the environmental debate. But I think what's very important, whilst we've done the work, I think that the work we've been doing with a lot of governments, whether it's in the UK or really across the EU, we're going to start to see this legislation coming forward now that's going to push this further. Today, generally, plastic is cheaper. It's a lower cost solution to our customers and the retailer than corrugated, because nobody has to pay, well, the consumer doesn't have to pay for the cleanup of the plastic. So this is being the playing field we expect to be levelled over the coming 1 and 2 years. We expect to see progressive taxation come through. We've done a lot of work here with governments, with the EU. We're encouraged by their consultation documents. We're encouraged by some of the initial bans they put on. And we think that whilst we can all feel this, what could really drive further growth into DS Smith, into our industry, is some of this progressive taxation, which we expect to come on over the next 1 to 2 years. You're already seeing those consultation documents out there. Great to have the design, but here again we show our design centres. This is about the route to market. How do we get it out there? We've got a selection. We've got design centres everywhere across Europe. We're building them in the US as well. It's been a particular feature of DS Smith over many years. 9 impact centres, 36 pack right centres where customers can go. We're having now about between 500 and 600 meetings a year. These are extensive meetings with retailers. That is all of the major retailers coming, and the big brands, often they'll come together as to how they solve these problems. We can see the barrier. I think the taxation will be a big opportunity for us. But it's also how we work to get those solutions. And it's working. It's just a very recent win in the last couple of weeks. Retailer Morrisons, we've been working with them and some of their own label suppliers. And now you're going to see, for example, all of their bacon, the big category in the UK. All of that, all on shelf, is all being replaced with corrugated trays and presentation solutions coming out of plastics. So we can see that opportunity. And things like that, a plastic placement is why, when we look at our volume, why we're winning with our customers. The volume growth with our multinational contracts is up 6%. FMCG is up 3%, again, on top of last year and on top of the previous year. So we're really gaining share in our core category. Industrial customers have been impacted by the macroeconomic downturn, and we are very, very selective about the margin. We do not have an integrated model with packaging and paper. You don't want to sell at the margin, we don't have to. We don't have to fill the supply chain. We have a short paper position, so we just buy less paper. That allows us to be choosy on the margin. And that pricing discipline, you've seen it in our core markets, how we've held on to it. It's been a particular feature of us, recovering on the way up and maintaining that value that we're offering. And there is a trade-off with some volume. And we've seen it in some of the industrial markets. But in H2, due to firstly the timing of some particular contracts, just the timing first half, second half, we can now see those new contracts coming in. We can see that in Indiana, the start of that facility, where we have been capacity constrained in the UK, and significantly capacity constrained, that is now online. And if we look at Europac, when we took that over, the packaging business, the pricing, wasn't where we wanted it to be. So we had negative growth in Europac, in the first period of when we bought it, and in Q1 of this financial year, but Q2 is strongly positive. And that's a typical feature of us as we get the pricing and the commercial excellence installed. The impact on volume, up until the end of Q1, but Q2 it's now nicely positive. Those three give us real confidence in that in the outlook for volume. If we look at Europac, it's really quite encouraging performance. We know the economic background that we have faced, but in the first half, we've made a return on capital of over 8% in that first 6 months period, despite all those economic headwinds. We're very pleased with this. How has it come? On the packaging side, that commercial excellence. It is now strongly profitable, the packaging business, and that's not just because of the lower paper price. That's the commercial excellence coming in and driving that operational excellence. We said it was a major opportunity for us, and we're delighted to see that coming through. We've seen the winning of new contracts, particularly coming in Q2 and now coming into our Q3. In terms of the synergies, again, we've upgraded from 50 to 70 million. You'll see on the slide, which Adrian presented, you see the synergy produced. We are well on track for that, and we're very pleased. The PACE program is absolutely unique in Iberia. And the way we're rolling that out, using performance-based packaging, going to our customers, that's why we're now getting the growth and we're getting the financial returns that we expect. It's gone very well indeed. As I said before, in integration, it's really one of our best. In terms of our US operations, the domestic market remains very good for us. We haven't been able to keep up with the demand from our customers. We've known about that, so we have built a new facility, and my goodness, what a facility it is. It is absolutely state-of-the-art. It's a facility that doesn't exist in the US in terms of its capability to supply performance-based packaging, to supply the right solutions we have in Europe for things like e-commerce for our big FMCG customers. It's working very well for us, but it does have a long paper position. We've always been very open about that. Long paper position, and we export some of that paper. We have to close that out, and there are a number of programs that. One is we bought a business, CCC, a Corrugated Container Corporation, in 2018. Secondly, opening his new site. The new site increased our packaging capacity by over 30%. That site on its own will take over half our export volumes, and we'll see ongoing growth in that business. The plant has opened. Here is a picture of a week ago. It's in Indiana, and it's snowing. Been snowing quite heavily there. It's just outside Indianapolis. As I said, it's a state of the art. It's produced a third increase in capacity, and we're now delivering. It is now working for these customers, and there are other customers, European customers, where we sold on the same basis as we supply Europe. I can't put them on the side because they won't allow us to put it on there, but I can assure you they're there, and the initial startup is very, very encouraging. So there is a video outside about it. They continue to strengthen our business model. How do we show that no matter what the environment, as we've shown over many years, we can continue to drive profitable growth, continue to drive the margin? Well, it is about that FMCG focus, value-added innovation that lead this market, and with our increasing, our ongoing focus in innovation, it's driving more value. Maintaining our long recycling position. This has always been important to our customers, but it's increasingly important. We are a net recycler, and it's being valued by our end customers. Increasing our short paper position. It is right for our business. We've seen the volatility in paper. Therefore, it is right to have a short position. We are creating that in the US with the opening new site, and we continue to review our European paper footprint which, as we said previously, we expect to be concluded this financial year. So the outlook, drives of growth are good. There's volatility in the market, but it's volatility we can deal with. Our differentiation means that we're able to take a bit of advantage of those main trends. And we're seeing, we expect H2 volumes, as I said, to be ahead of H1, just in the time, etc. And we have a positive outlook for the second half. We expect further growth in the year and our profitability. Thank you.
Questions?
Thanks very much. It's Barry Dixon from Davy. A couple of questions, please. Just in terms of the volume growth, Miles, you've talked about pricing discipline and we've seen the impact, I think, or we've heard that message from you now for some time. Can you talk a little bit about that in the context of your ambitions to sort of grow ahead of the market and how important pricing discipline is to you now in terms of that trade-off between margin protection? The second question is around the profitability of Europac and just to try and to get a sense as to the impact of falling paper prices versus your, I suppose, self-help in terms of getting rid of low-margin contracts as to how that has contributed and how you would expect that to roll out going forward and how maybe the how much of each of those have contributed to the decline in the profitability of Europac since you acquired it. And then if just in terms of your organic volume growth into the second half of the year, you're optimistic on that. If you exclude that sort of Europac impact and the impact of Indiana, what kind of underlying organic growth do you think the business can generate in the second half of the year? Thank you.
Look, taking the first point about volumes, in the first half, I think the markets were weaker than we originally expected. The underlying economies, there was quite a bit of volatility, probably a little bit more than we thought. We are very picky on pricing. We always have been. We want to grow in our core categories. There are some other categories here which we don't think are long-term value drivers for us. We are very disciplined on prices in some markets. You know, we can really see the effect. I could say to everybody, we could have had 2 or 2.5% growth. That's not a problem at all. It's really not a problem. Obviously, we have to buy the paper. That market is there. It's all in the volatile sort of volatile section. We can absolutely see that. The question for us, and when we see how we can build volume, sometimes there are just short-term impacts. Last half year, we grew 3.2%. We've grown 0.7 as a group now. It's better in Europe because we've got the lack of capacity in the US. So we've got a big comparative. We've grown again. We could have grown more. However, it's just some of the timing on contracts, and we want to grow value and margin in our core category, not just chase some of the other things. So I really don't have a particular concern about that. We've been here before. Sometimes it's worked out that it's been a little bit quiet, but I really don't have a concern. The core value, if we look at the profitability of our core group of customers, line to service quality and innovation, we can see over years that margin increasing, and that has maintained the same. Take out, you know, the paper cycle, etc. We can see that they're valuing that, and that's what we need to drive more into. And I think you'll see that in the second half. We do have this issue about Europac having nothing in the first quarter and growing strongly now. That's what we expect. The US will, as you said, will see Indiana come on, and so far it's been open 4 weeks, but it does look seems to be working quite well. The quality is good, and the service is coming out as we expect. So we're pleased with that. We're very pleased. In terms of Europac, we're very pleased with that first performance. As you know, that business, when we took it in more paper than it had our packaging, so it's been more exposed to that cycle. You can see from the results that actually the performance of the business, excluding it, has been extremely strong. Synergies coming through, you've upgraded, the amount of synergies have been very, very good. But the packaging performance, we always said this is an area that goes above the synergy target. It's about the commercial excellence and how we drive value into our packaging offering. Ultimately, if we're going to create a successful business, we really have to differentiate in the packaging. That's what we need. That's what we need to get. And we've always felt we'll get that by offering something that other people can't, which is about the pan-European supply, but about the solutions that we're giving them as well, showing how it adds more value to our customers. We've seen that come through over the years. Look at that margin here. It's 11%. We used to be below 5%. Constantly driving that value. I think now is a further test. Raw material costs are down. How much can we hold on to? How much of this is really going to be valued by our customers? Just as it was a year ago when we saw the increase in raw materials, we recovered all of that. So when we go into Europac, yes, we've had the lower pay price, very good synergy, good integration. I'm really pleased with the packaging performance. It's a last reminder on that. When we bought it, it was making up -1% return. Our business in the same region was making about 8 and 9% return, and we get it to that margins, and we are well on track. If you sort of look at the organic growth, I mean, in Europe we're just below 0.9. If you adjust for the Europac business, etc. Some of this other stuff, you know, well, I think we're 1.3, something like that. Market's about flat, so we've still taken share. But FMCG's plus 3%. You know, this is just where we're focusing. We need to come more. We're going to see. I think at the moment, City Industrial has been quite volatile, but seems to be reasonably flat at the moment. Hence again, gives us confidence about should be there. Especially for the very recent results, they are.
Thank you. It's Justin Jordan from Exane. I've got three different questions. Firstly, just on slide 5, the revenue development bridge that you've given us. Thank you for this. You talk about plus 12 as the corrugated volume contribution. So this is the 0.7% organic volume growth. And so I appreciate, Adrian, you've given a little bit on this, but I just wanted to sort of just, sorry, I wasn't quite listening to what you said. For that maths to work in the 0.7% organic growth, that would imply that the denominator of that calculation would be something like 1.7 billion sterling.
That's exactly what I said, yeah.
Yeah, can you just walk us through, sorry, the 1.3 billion or so of other revenue, what's in there, please?
So you've got 1.7 is corrugated box.
Is that just Europe or is that group, including US?
It's excluding Europac and excluding North America.
So the 0.7% organic volume growth that excludes the US,
yeah,
and excludes North America.
Yeah. I mean, if it's helpful, Justin, you know, afterwards, Hugo and Rachel can take you through the exact model. It's not a problem. But it was what I said, it's 1.7, it's excluding Europac and North America. You've then got about $500 million from other packaging, which is sheet, which is packaging services, packaging solutions, the separate businesses. Then you've got about $400 million from external sales of paper and recyclate. And then you'll have Europac, then you'll have North America. And we can take you through the splits on those as well.
And so what was the organic volume growth in including the US and Europac, please?
So the organic growth?
The organic box volume growth, including the US and including Europac, then, please. Okay, take out Europac because it wasn't there in the prior year, but US was.
So you're talking about revenue?
No, you said
box volume.
Yeah, box volume. You said was 70 basis points,
yeah,
excluding the US. Appreciate Europac wasn't there in the prior year, but including the US, which was there in the prior year, what was the organic volume, box volume growth, please?
Struggling to work out. Do you understand what the question is?
So Justin,
okay, you had interstate since 2017.
Yeah.
So it is in the prior year comparator. You're calling out organic box volume growth of 0.7%, excluding the US. I'm asking you, please.
That includes the US. That's the whole market. Their overall volume.
Including the US.
That's the overall like for like for the group as a whole.
Okay, thank you for clarifying. And just on the Europac specifically, in your annual report, you talk about the fact that if you'd owned it for the year to April 2019, it would have generated revenues of 780 million sterling and EBIT of 130 million. In the first 6 months of ownership, it's generated EBIT of 44 million sterling. Can you explain to us why that's fallen so dramatically year over year, please?
Have you included the synergies in your 44, Justin?
Frankly, even if you include the synergies, it's down, Adrian.
So including the synergies, it's 61 sterling, EBITA.
Yep.
So what were you going back to?
So in note 30 of your 2019 annual report,
right,
you say that it had, if you'd owned it for the full year to April 2019, revenues of 780 million sterling and EBITA of 130 million sterling. So even with synergies, the profit of that business has gone backwards in the first year of ownership.
Yeah.
Can you help us understand that, please?
It's a long paper business. Paper prices are down 20%.
Okay. So
I'm wondering whether there's anything, you know, in the question I'm not seeing.
No, I'm just trying to clarify that essentially Europac's gone backwards since you bought it, both in revenue.
Paper price in Europe is down 20% since we bought it.
Okay. And then just in terms of your EBIT bridge on, you know, slide 6.
Yeah.
So if you exclude Europac and the synergies,
yeah,
your EBIT would have been 290 million, giving you a margin of 10%. So the margin improvement year over year is entirely down to Europac.
Europac is margin enhancing. It would be. It's a big craft business. We said that at the start. Reason why we increased our targets. There's a mathematical,
sure,
increase in margin through the acquisition of Europac.
But I just want to clarify that the underlying organic...
Your math is, you know, if you've calculated that, I'm not going to doubt your math, Justin.
Sure, but what I'm just clarifying is that the organic margin improvement year over year is zero. It's entirely down to Europac, the 110 basis points margin improvement.
Europac is margin enhancing to the business as a whole. That's a mathematical fact, reason why we increased our margin targets. There are other synergies that Europac has generated within the business, and there are other things outside the business as we shifted volumes around. So I don't think you can be so precise, but I can categorically say the inclusion of Europac within our business increases mathematically our margin, which is the reason why we raised our targets.
Fantastic. Just one final question, sorry, for Miles, actually. Back on September 4th at the AGM statement, on the call, you talked about, at that point, box prices on index volumes being down 1% to 3% at that point. Appreciate that's 3 months ago. Can you just update us where you are in terms of box prices on index contracts today, please?
Yeah. So if we look at half on half, we've seen on a comparative, box prices are down 2%, depending on the sort of the category. 2% on the 12 months from the first half.
And sorry, specifically on the index contracts, which you referred to on September 4th? On September 4th, you referred to your index contracts pricing being,
yes,
down,
right,
1% to 3%.
Can, right.
What is that today, please?
On the index deals, it's probably, well, it's going to be more than that. You probably add another percent to that.
Somewhere in the neighbourhood of 2 to 4 right now, then.
In terms of the index contracts, that's right. We have, if we look at our business, 40% is on indexed, 60% is on what we call freely negotiated. What we've seen is on the index, they move up and down, so therefore,
therefore we'd have seen further erosion in those. But on the freely negotiated, there, as we expect, we've seen much more resilience.
Okay. And just thinking about that when we think about the second half, just want to clarify, on the 15 million of costs for the independent startup that you've guided to for the year to April 2020, I know you said a modest amount in H1. How much was that, please, Adrian? Okay. So you've got that headwind in the second half, and you've got clearly the impact of falling box prices.
Yeah.
So I appreciate you've got hopefully an acceleration of volume growth, but how does the EBIT in the second half be greater than the first half?
Absolutely. As we said, so you've got the opening of Indiana, so you've got the start-up losses, but then you've got the volume coming in and bringing the paper back on from the offshore market. You've got the ongoing volume growth. You've got the ongoing efficiency in the business. So if you take your maths previously, you said the 1.7, you take another percent off, that's 17, so you can see how we could easily be out, how we can easily offset that with the other factors that I've said.
But, you know, you previously said 1% of box prices is something like 30 to 40 million on annual.
I'm using your maths.
Sure, but, you know, what I'm saying is that, unfortunately, the maths of negative box prices in the second half and first half is going to more than overwhelm the volume growth.
No, I'm using your maths, your figures that you've just given. And, of course, if you look at those indices, which I said, that only applies to the box volume, which you've just highlighted.
Okay, we'll see what the outcome is. Thanks, Mark.
No, we will.
Thank you. David O'Brien from Goodbody. If I could, unfortunately, go back to box prices, please. Maybe some more colour, if you give us, what is the point-to-point from the start of the quarter? What's the exit rate of box price decline? So 1 to 2 is the average, but even from the Q1 commentary you gave us, it seems like the box is reasonably stable at that stage. So it implies that your Q2 has seen a more material step down. So I'm just kind of trying to get a sense of what the trajectory into the second half is like.
So if we look at Q1, we said that we've seen some erosion. I mean, if you go over from 12 months ago, we're talking 1 to 2%. You know, these are, I think, by any standard, say that has been a very good price retention. Basically, the phasing on the big contracts is it's all on averages, so there isn't any particular acceleration or deceleration on that. It's really quite mathematical. It's just taking averages. As the average comes down, then it's sort of passed through. We look at all of the types of contract we have with the big customers and when they're coming through. And again, sometimes there's a bit about our quarter ends, quarter starts, etc., but it's not particularly phased from one point to the from one quarter to the next, because it's all on indexation. It hasn't materially changed.
And I guess, sorry to follow up on Justin again, but on the negotiated side of them, you were pointing to kind of a flat pricing environment when you spoke at the agent.
Yeah, that's right. And we have seen some, but it continues to be very resilient. It hasn't, and I'm sure, you know, we do expect for there to be further erosion on the box pricing side if paper prices stay where they are. Now we'll have to see where they go into the new year, but if everything stays the same, then you will see more erosion there. And we've just talked about, if you've had the sort of the 1 to 2% over 12 months ago, if you apply that to where we are today going forward, I'm just saying, if that was the case, you can see how we should be able to deal with that with our ongoing efficiency, the volume growth, etc.
In terms of the US and the bridge of profitability, can you give us a sense of what the final part of interstate synergies is in that profit bridge? And also,
it's very small.
It's very small. And what about the small acquisition?
Small acquisition, it'll be negligible. It'll be substantially all Europac in that number.
No, sorry, specifically on the US part of the bridge, there's no contribution from that small acquisition.
Not that we could easily tease out, because we've moved volume around. So the acquisition was absorbed into the footprint. So we've shifted volumes from legacy interstate to it. So if I teased it out, you know, the performance of the acquisition has been through the roof. But that's been a sort of a false performance, because we've moved volume in there from other plants as we've tried to free up capacity. So we haven't looked at it per se like that. However, you know, clearly the fact it's cutting up our paper
rather than going to the export market is a, you know, is in and itself been a positive in that paper price environment.
What type of return on capital do you see for the investments in North America at the moment? Are you confident?
I think if we look at it in terms of, on an averaging basis since we've owned it, I mean, last year it was through the roof returns. This year is lower than that. On an average basis, you know, it's achieving its above the group cost of capital, which is where we said it would get to. It just happened to be last year it was a phenomenal performance from where the paper pricing environment was, and this year it's lower. It still had a cost of capital. It's still value enhancing, but you have to look at it, or feel you have to look at it on an averaging basis over the cycle. You can't just take. And that's the issue. I mean, the reason why we always want to be short paper is to reduce your exposure to the cyclicality. You can just see it in a commoditized product. You do get that exposure to the cycle.
And two quick final ones, if I could. The non-recourse factoring is now down to 475. You want to get it below 500. Is that going to stay around there?
Yeah, exactly.
Not much lower. Perfect. And in terms of the paper cycle itself, you know, prices continue to erode despite yourselves and a number of peers trying to increase prices mid-2019. We have a large mill coming on maybe before the end of the year, at least at the start, two more in the second half of the year. Like, how concerned are you about the paper cycle, the ability to absorb new capacity? Can you quantify what supply side growth you see for 2020 calendar?
The unknown unknown at the moment, as it is every year, is Christmas downtime. I mean, I know we're taking... You know, we've been running our plants hot for the last few years, so you know, we've got a lot of maintenance to do over Christmas. I don't know how else that translates, but inventory levels are at sensible levels now. If you go through Christmas with similar levels and you see the corrugated volume that we've certainly been seeing in the last couple of months across Europe continuing, then there's a strong pull. If you see a very erratic production cycle over Christmas, so people not managing downtime to when the consumption is, and you see high inventories going into the new year, you'll see a different scenario. So I think time will play out on that. You know, we have no visibility. We know what we're doing. We know where our inventories are and where our demand is, and we're confident on that basis.
We have seen the inventories fall, and we've seen production actually fall in Europe over the last few months. And, you know, we know what we're doing. We'll see what the industry, but actually, I think we were surprised the price of paper came down a bit. Now, OCC came down at the same time, so is it just sort of a cost pass through on the OCC into the paper? We were surprised that it came down, given what we're seeing in our activity. And we've seen capacity come out. So we'll just have to see, you know, and if it's up, it's down, we never know. But, you know, how we drive the value in packaging is obviously where we're focused. But it's a lot tighter than it used to be, even at the moment. It feels tighter. You know, if we look at what we're selling, then actually the order book's pretty good from our mills.
Yeah, reading Rissi this morning, a small Italian, like 50,000 tonnes has just gone bankrupt in Italy. So you don't see... Things will shut, things will open, things will go. You know, there might be, I don't know what happens, but in the end, if demand continues for corrugated in Europe at the levels we're seeing, having started the year for Europe as a whole, so I'm talking about DS Smith, for Europe as a whole in negative territory, getting stronger through the year to where it's seems to be exiting the year at, if that carries through. Yeah, that's a different scenario. And we've seen this in previous years. Things turn on a sixpence because actually, you know, the supply and the demand is pretty well balanced. So you only need demand to be slightly stronger than supply in it, and prices go up and vice versa. And we've seen that now consistently, certainly in my 6 or 7 years here.
Now, you've given us your net short position in Europe. What is the gross, what in terms of gross tonnage you're selling externally, to understand your revenue bridge a little bit better, what is the amount of tonnage you're actually selling into the open market?
Well, currently, at the current run rate external, we're probably selling probably something about 1.3 million tonnes, something like that, roughly. It does move around. Again, we run a very dynamic model, what we sell externally, what we produce internally, so you can see the top line move as we use more of our internal or we sell the paper. It's a very dynamic model. We do not have an integration target. We do not say that we should be 50%, 70%, 100%. We supply our packaging customers with the paper that's right for them, for their solution. We make it or buy it, we are... That is a separate discussion. So it does move around a bit.
Yeah.
It's, and at the moment, it's probably about 1.3 million. In the past, it's probably been as high as 1.7 million, something like that.
I think, I mean, it was interesting. I think it was Paul, one of the other analysts, was saying this morning, if you'd integrated all of your internal volume, you wouldn't have had the drop in revenue.
Exactly.
Absolutely. But, you know, our focus is on profitability and return. So,
yeah,
you know, we're less... less driven by the revenue line, more driven by the profit line. But he's absolutely right. That would have been the case. I mean, I think revenue's off 4 or 5% simply driven by paper prices. If we'd integrated, you wouldn't have seen that.
Thank you.
No more questions? Oh, there's
one more.
Yeah. Thank you. Rob Chantry, Berenberg. Could you just talk a bit about the structural paper position in the US specifically? I think you called out 200,000 tonnes. How much of that was sold to DS Smith Europe versus external market?
Yeah.
And then the second part of that would be, obviously you've got the big Indiana facility coming on that absorbs half that cost. Is there any more appetite to do any more large greenfield opportunities in there?
Absolutely. So look, in America, as we said, we had about 200,000 tonnes, European tonnes of paper. In effect, that's a long position. If that's sold externally, we, in effect, get the upside of that into Europe. Paper price to come down there on the import volume, so we get the benefit of that. You could say, and that's why the box prices have dropped, because we're having to pay less for that paper. But it's effectively... The lower cost that comes in elsewhere in the group. The reason it's been affected is because the US has been exporting a lot to China, the US market, and of course all the sort of the trade disputes between the US and China has affected the whole flow of paper from the US into China, and that has affected pricing, and therefore we've seen a lot more of American products coming into Europe. We do expect that to change in time. We expect when these current trade disputes are resolved, then we think the flow of paper between the States and China will pick up again. So it's a temporary position, but it has been running for probably about a year now. When we look at that long position, the 200,000 tonnes, as I said, we're opening CC. We bought CCC. We have another 130,000 tonnes eventually at full run rate for the new factory. We want to build a much bigger position in the US. Another similar factory would actually mean that we're net short in the US. We have plans to do that. We know where we'll go, how we'll go, with which customers we'll go. But today, we focus on really getting that factory up and running properly, not just because of the return on capital of that, because it makes a statement into the US. It's giving our customers what they've told us they want, and we want to prove that. We want them to really come on board with there, and we've been very pleased with the response of those customers. I think we'll know over the next 6 months how well that's really come on, and then I think that would unlock further opportunity for us in the US. We have no issue in the medium term about the long paper. We knew it. We know how to deal with it. If it goes as we expect, we think that's going to become a short position. If you look at the profitability of our US domestic business, it is some of the highest in the group. It is very, very good. The stability of the market in the US has been much better than Europe, and we need more exposed there. It's just because we haven't matured our model there. That's what it's about. It's just a timing issue, how we can get hold of the greater margins in the US with our big customers, who are currently giving us more work there. and we can see it in our results. So I think, you know, let's give it 6 months, and I think we'll be talking then about our further opportunities there. It's really very exciting indeed. Well, look, I'm very conscious of people's time. It's gone over hours. If there aren't any other sort of burning questions for the whole audience, of course, Adrian and myself and Hugo and Rachel are here for some time if you have any questions. But just to say thank you very much for your time today. I do much appreciate it. And once again, just pleased with our results, but positive on the second half. Thank you very much.
Thank you.